Thanks for tuning in to the HR Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Lucinda Carney. The HR Uprising is focused on helping forward-thinking people professionals deliver real lasting value in their organisations. I'm a chartered psychologist, speaker and trainer, and recently authored the best-selling business book, How to Be a Change Superhero. My day job is founder and CEO of software and training business Actus. This gives me the opportunity to work with other businesses like yours. We are focused on building a better workplace for people wherever they are located, with the help of our performance, learning and talent management software and our training and consultancy services. Every week on the podcast, I will be covering different topics and challenges, joined by relevant experts and real-life people professionals. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy and get value from this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's HR Uprising podcast. And this week it's a solo episode. I wanted to focus in on one of our how-to series. And this particular topic, we're going to look at how to do OD or organisational development. I thought this was a topic worth doing when we were looking at the website metrics recently and realised that our number one page that people have come to our Actus website is 5 steps for organisational development, and about 20,000 people visited there last year. So clearly it's a topic that people are interested in, and I have done previous podcasts on this, one on demystifying OD, which you can look back on. It's one of the really early ones. It's one of the first 10, I think. So this one, I'll aim not to cover the same ground, but I will put links in the show notes to various blogs that we've done and webinars that we've done if you're really trying to understand this more. So first of all, though, some essentials. What are we talking about when we're talking about organisational development? And I think it is a bit of a mysterious topic, and that's why so many people are kind of Googling it, looking it up. And interestingly, I even find that, despite the fact that I did a master's in organisational development, it's hard to describe. And ultimately, what I would say it is it's about evolving, adapting or improving an organisation to meet strategic goals. So that's what I believe it should be. It's a planned process. So it's not just a reactive thing. And it's something which would include multiple aspects. So it's not just one item, an implementation or a single intervention. It's a series of interventions which are implemented over a period of time that should impact or change the way the organisation operates. Very often it's about culture change and change in some way. So change is very often part of it. And importantly, it should be using behavioural science or psychology. It should be evidence-based and it should be measured, so it's not just erratic. So it's really very much about organisational change. It's a process of change. However, it's important that it should be in line with achieving a specific strategic goal, and it's something which would involve a series of factors. So when would you be going to do OD? Well, this again is quite hard to describe. So I was thinking ideally it's something which would be strategic and proactive, i.e. something that you're planning to do rather than tactical. Now that's not to say that you wouldn't sometimes need to see that there's a business issue and have to respond to it with an OD intervention or maybe a series of OD interventions. But it's where there's a business need for behavioural or cultural change and you've got evidence for that need. If it is reactive, then it may be that, again, you've identified a business issue. For example, let's say the evidence shows that you're recruiting people, but you're losing them at a high rate. Let's say 30% of the people that you're recruiting are leaving within the first 3 months. So how do you solve that? What you want to do is make sure you've got people on board. What's the issue there? And there may be a multitude of issues that are causing it. It could be, you know, something very simple like your recruitment process, but more likely it's a whole series of things that you'd need to look at it. It could be whether you have got the roles defined properly and people are coming on board and realising actually it's not the job they thought they'd applied for. So that could be something to do with describing what the roles are. It could be your onboarding or pre-boarding process or lack of it. It could be that when people join, the managers are absent. So it could be manager skill. Or it could be that the company vision or brand, once people get on board, it it's a mismatch with the recruitment process. So it may well be there's a multitude of factors that have caused something that you identify as a reactive problem, that we are losing recruits, but it might take a series of interventions, which would feel like more OD because you're doing a series of interventions to solve it. The other area where I think that we may need to think of things from an OD perspective as opposed to tactical is if you're in learning and development, it's a great example. People would regularly come along and say, okay, I need some presentation skills training, or we need some management training. Very often, training courses are only treating the symptom. So you can give people those skills, but is it actually going to be a long-term fix? The great one is something like management training, where you can train people to have continuous conversations, to be coaches, let's say, to have a coaching approach. You can give people the skills. However, if the environment that they sit in is highly reactive, or if the leadership behaviours that they sit under are modelling entirely different behaviours, or if their workload is such that they're rewarded for being individual contributors as opposed to managing people, then culturally, you're not going to get benefit, or the benefit that people think, from the training itself. You need to think of it from a more holistic approach if what we're really trying to do is, let's say, engender a coaching culture or make sure that people feel developed by their line managers. You have to look at all of the things that are influencing it. So what I suppose what I'm explaining here is that we might be involved in OD at any point when we are looking more broadly rather than tactically at something. And actually, we probably should always be doing that, because it's very rare in organisations that something is just a really simple fix. And that's where it's tricky, because sometimes you're working on simple projects, but it's about how they all fit together. So you might be putting in a learning management system, but actually, is that going to make people learn? You can go and procure something, but is that actually going to achieve the strategic outcome? There's probably a whole load of other things that are involved in achieving the goal that presumably buying a learning management system was there to achieve. So it's a process of interventions with the shared aim of addressing a problem or delivering a strategic solution in a multitude of ways. And I suppose this links back to our how to be strategic. Always thinking, when you are involved in doing something in your organisation, about the bigger picture. What is the overall goal, as opposed to, the overall goal is not training 20 managers in management skills. The overall goal is increasing employee engagement, or retaining talent, or increasing productivity. So it's making sure that we're always looking at all the other things that are going to be impacting whatever it is, in order to make sure that you get the maximum value out of your intervention. In terms of the organisational development process, if you Google OD, you will basically come up with loads and loads of images of exactly the same thing, of a development process cycle. When I've talked about it before, I talk about a 5 steps of OD. It's quite general in the way that I'll try and bring it to life. But the process that people would say, if you are going to get involved in some OD, is going through 5 stages, essentially. The first one is identifying the problem or the strategic challenge. So that might be defined in a range of ways, whether it's because people are saying that there's anecdotal evidence from employees saying that they're too busy to do something, or they're unable to, they don't know, they don't have clarity about what their role is, whatever it might be. It could be that you're getting data from staff surveys or from exit interviews, all the places in the organisation that you've got data. Or it could be that you are foreseeing a future strategic issue where there's a new competitor coming into the marketplace that's got different skills from your existing skills within your organisation. And you can see that you're going to have to look to, in order to be competitive, address your skills gap. So you start by identifying a problem. And that also could be where someone comes to you and says, they often come to you and say what the solution is that they want, but actually what you need to unpick is what's the actual problem. That goes back to my point about, if people come to you for training, actually, so what is it they're trying to achieve in the first place? What is the problem they're trying to overcome? They come and say they want presentation skills training or conflict resolution training. Someone talked to me about that the other day, they needed conflict resolution training. Okay, so what's the actual issue? And understanding that maybe it's some personality issues between specific types. Maybe it's a lack of understanding of individual differences. Maybe there's a lot of pressure in terms of how people's work is being managed, which is putting people under stress and it's causing conflict. So it's actually going at what's actually causing the problem rather than just starting with the symptoms. The next stage is, once you've got sense of that problem, you need to actually be really clear and analyse it in more detail, really, making more of a formal assessment of it. So gather information, maybe it's about talking to people, holding focus groups, getting a whole sort of whole round of information to be sure that the facts are there, and also that you can measure the change, I guess. So you need to know where you are currently in order to be able to measure the change. Then you can think, sort of action planning, part three, is what might be the solutions. So we might think of a variety of options, but then you want to work out what's the best solution in terms of this. This part for me is about thinking properly about almost project managing the change. So maybe creating visuals as to what it is that the plan is, whether it's a training plan or a range of measures, so that everybody can see how the different OD measures fit together and what the different impacts are. Ensuring that times are put alongside it, so a sort of project plan. Think of COTA, where I've talked about change. Think of the COTA model, using something like that to plan the change. Making sure that you are involving the right people and making sure that you've got communication. So this stage really is about planning the programme of intervention. And I'd also say making sure that you've got clarity is what you're hoping to get out of each one of them. So what the desired impact is in each area. So, you know, you want to know what the skill change might be and what the long-term impact ideally might be, and also having milestones along the way, which might be we're going to get 20 managers trained by the end of January, and we're also going to do role reviews by the end of December. So all of the different interventions, have it together as a plan. Make sure you can see how they all interrelate. And I'll talk about interrelation later when I mention Burke Litwin. And just get it clear as a plan and get people bought into it and check that it's going to be realistic as well in terms of the timeframes. And the reason it's important to have all of them on almost one sheet of paper is that you can sometimes see that different interventions may overlap, or you need the same people for the same thing. So you might want to adjust your timelines to make sure you can achieve it all. But what you're trying to do is see how all of these interrelated OD aspects are going to work together to get the impact you're after, as opposed to lots of separate tactics that people can't see how they all work together. It becomes disparate. And sometimes also what happens there is things work against each other. So again, let's go back to, we're trying to improve compliance in an organisation, and we need to get in some compliance training, we get put everyone through that, but at the same time we're expecting people to do appraisals, and at the same time there's a pressure on doing some sort of specific meetings or something else, which would, you know, maybe you're putting in a different system that's going to take the same resource. It's being able to see how all of these things interrelate so that you can predict any challenges. So that's your sort of main middle bit, which is plan that change. Then, of course, common sense, what you then need to do is implement your plan. This is where it is really useful if you have put milestones in, because you can then see if you're offline on the milestone, you can adjust the plan. It doesn't have to stay, you know, tweak it if it's not quite right, reassess it, and have sort of ideal impact points. This is where if people roll out systems, they may sometimes put a pilot in or a first raft so that they can roll something out, assess how it went, and then tweak how they roll it from there. So be prepared to implement your plan, tweak it, and then roll it again. And then analyze the results, of course. So it's look at the impact. Is it doing what you need to do? As you go through it, are the results as you would expect? If not, tweak things. And of course, you need to pull that data as well. So finding that data that you had at the start, are you starting to affect that data? Is it having the impact that you hoped for? And then, of course, it's tweak and repeat. So there's nothing other than common sense really in that, is there? But the main things that make it more OD oriented, I would say, is first of all, making sure that it's very data-based. So making sure that you have got some real evidence and some tangible outputs that you're looking to achieve. And the other one for me is making sure that you have this holistic plan, which looks at the interrelations between these different activities. It's, you know, it's, I almost think about it like a pincer movement, that it's not one thing. You know, organisations are complex, systems are complex. One thing won't change it, but a series of things are likely to. A simplistic example of this might be, let's say somebody wants to lose weight. Well, they could just decide to exercise. That might work for them. But if they decide to exercise and they decide to only have healthy food in their fridge, and they decide to try a vegan diet once a week, and they decide to listen to meditations that help them see themselves in a positive, fit light, and they decide to take up a sport, you know, whatever it is, all of these whole thing of measures where people talk about you need to have a lifestyle change, that's what you're talking about really in an organization. It's not just doing one tactical intervention, it's talking about a succession of interventions that are going in the right direction for that organization. So that's what we talked about now. It's, you know, what is OD, what an OD process cycle might be. And I wanted to explain a model called the Burke-Litwin model, which I came across a number of years ago. It was developed in the 90s, 1992. And I will put a download if you want to go and look at this, because it's going to be relatively hard to explain when it's a visual map. You could Google it. But basically, Burke-Litwin show a map of an organisation in terms of the different aspects of it that all interrelate, and their map shows how things interrelate. Now, they do suggest that one of the main ones that changes things, or one of the most effective, is external environment. So it could be markets, legislation, competition, economy. In actual fact, you can see that right now, there's loads of examples where the external environment has enforced change rapidly. Let's just take COVID. You know, we've been talking about hybrid working, people working remotely for years, but that was never going to happen at the pace it did until a pandemic came along and forced us almost overnight to become online digital in terms of our workloads. So that's an example of the external environment having a very rapid impact on how organisations operate, and lots of cultural knock-on. Other things with the economy are also, there's lots of the legislation and fuel, and there's cost of living crisis, there's loads of things that are going to impact. We can't actually change a lot of those in our roles, so what I would focus on more are the things that are within our remit. So within the organisation, the other things that they would talk about that would influence things, at the very top, the transformational factors would be things like mission and strategy. So the extent to which the organisation clearly articulates its reason for existing. And in theory, this is what everything should be built on. So if your business doesn't have a clear vision or strategy, then that can cause problems down the line. That, of course, should then be supported by another transformational strategy factor, which is leadership. So the attitudes and behaviours seen in leaders can never be underestimated. The bottom line is, I think about the numbers of times, again, going back to, you might go and train people managers to be amazing coaches, stick with the earlier example, yet they are managed by people who model the opposite behaviours. Well, you're not going to get them to model those behaviours unless they're having them modelled to them. Role modelling is so important. So the behaviours of your leaders will make a big difference to your organisation. Many OD interventions, we need to think about how the leaders either sponsor it, actually lead by example, get behind it. You know, all of those, their behaviours will make a difference in any OD intervention as to whether they're behind it or not. And then, of course, organisational culture, which is really difficult to describe, sometimes it's talked about as the way we do things about here. And that's where so much about OD is all about, trying to impact culture. So culture, mission and vision, leadership, anything when you're dealing with those areas, you are getting into the realms of OD, because that's how you're going to transform an overall organisation. And also, I suppose the key here is then you need to have a good relationship with the leadership of the organisation, to be able to give them feedback, to be able to challenge them if they're saying something, doing something different from what they say. So helping them to literally lead the organisation to where you want it to be and to back it is absolutely key if you want any organisational development you do to be successful. So those are your transformational internal factors: mission and strategy, leadership and organisational culture. And then you have the next level, which all interrelate as well. So these are things that we can change. And this is where I think sometimes we just change one of them and think we've done something, but we don't think about the knock-on impact. So if you think about organisational structure, you might restructure the organisation, that might impact relationships, people's responsibilities, the way they work. So we need to think about what a structural change might do. Think about the team atmosphere. So Bert Clipwin talks about it as a work unit climate. That's really things like psychological safety. It's the way in which people feel part of a team. One of the questions in the engagement survey is having a best friend at work. So the relationships, the interrelationships, and again, you can think about how that might have been affected, might be being affected by working remotely. Have people still got those closer relationships? That would have a knock-on, right? We can think about that in terms of knock-on to people's loyalty to the organisation. Task requirements, so whether people have got the right roles to do the jobs, has a job changed, people's skills and abilities, have you got people in the right, with the right skills in the right job? So sometimes if jobs change or people need training to meet the needs of the job, this is important as well. All of these interrelate. Individuals' needs and values, if they change, are they motivated? Do they fit within the organisation? Do they feel valued? Do they feel they belong? Do they feel trusted? So those sort of things are really key, and that's going to impact employee motivation, whether people buy into things. So these areas, all of this, and then ultimately this ends in employee productivity. So what I've just described is actually a mesh that was going in almost levels of three. You'd have to see it as a diagram. I'm sure that nothing that I've described there is anything that you wouldn't be thinking about, but are you thinking about how it knocks on, how it relates? So if we went the other way round and we wanted to use Bert Clipwin to analyse how we improve employee performance. So let's say as a business, we want to improve employee performance or productivity. Well, first of all, we would want to have some metrics going back to our diagnostic. Have we got any metrics that say levels of productivity or performance at the moment? If we were going to look at it tactically, we're going to go, okay, we're going to teach everybody how to be more productive, some time management training or some training in how to do their job better. That would be a tactical approach. Is that going to solve it? Well, that's a training approach, but unsurprisingly, if you think about it, that probably isn't going to, because unless we're absolutely certain that the reason people aren't being fully productive is down to the fact that they don't know how to do their job, or then we need to look at other things. It's much more likely to be about their levels of motivation. So are people feeling demotivated? Let's say their motivation isn't as high as you'd like it to be, or once you fix the train, they've got the skills, but they're not motivated to be maximum productivity, productive. Well, where is motivation driven from? Well, when you look at Bert Clipwin, it's driven from a number of places. It's driven from the relationship with the line manager. So is the line manager demonstrating trust? Are they coaching them? Are they motivating them? Are they setting clear goals and expectations? So the line manager will have an impact on it. The individual's motivation itself will have an impact. So do they feel in the right job? Do they feel part of the team, going back to the team culture and climate? Are they do they have to feel that they've got the right skills for the job? Do they find it fulfilling? Do they buy into the mission and vision of the organisation? Do they have external stresses to do with the cost of living? All of these things that are in the Bert Clipwin model could be actually playing a part in that individual motivation. So it's never a really simple solution to increase productivity. We've got to take into account all of these areas and have a holistic approach if we're going to approach it from an OD point of view and think, how can we affect all of these things positively, which when you put it all together, it's going to maximise the chance for somebody to be productive. So we might say we are going to make sure that the managers are setting clear goals and objectives. They are demonstrating coaching skills. We are giving people support if they've got anxieties outside of work. We are clearly the leadership are clearly communicating the mission and vision, so people feel part of something. All of those things you can look at and ensure that wherever you see, and the data is pointing to there being issues, so let's say survey data is pointing to there being a lack of trust or otherwise, looking at where you think or which aspects of the overall set of influencers, which aspects does the data point to as being most likely to be making a difference to this? And then you can work on those. And bear in mind, it's likely to be more than one. So I'm conscious that this felt a little bit waffly. It's quite hard to describe just in a wordy way. But if you want to download the Birklit Win, go to hruprising.com and the Birklit Win graphic is there, or just Google the Birklit Win model and you'll be able to see it. And you could, if you were using that, you wanted to, you know, think about that in relation to a challenge you're doing now. So something that you are working on, whether it's doing some training for people or it's doing a restructure, whether it's putting in a competency framework, doing 360 feedback, performance management, putting in a learning platform, whatever it might be, take a step back and think, first of all, what's the overall strategic need that this is trying to achieve? Have we thought about that? What's our data or evidence for the fact that we need it right now? What data or evidence will we be looking at to demonstrate that we've had the right impact? And is that, are we going to get that benefit by just putting this system in? For example, let's take a system. Will we get that? What other things will need to be alongside it to make sure that it's successful? And you can look at that and think, okay, that's a new system or process. Do we need a new policy to support the usage of this? Do we need to make sure that the managers have clarity and training on how they are going to support people to utilize this? Do we need to role model it? So you can look at that and almost ask questions against whatever it is you're putting in and think, which bits have we not thought about that are likely to influence whether or not this change or investment that we're planning to do, this activity that we're planning to do, are we going to get the results that we want? Or do we need to do other things in order to nudge it along the way? Because the likelihood is it will require us a series of factors for that change to be successful. So I'm hoping that you've got a bit clearer about it. Maybe you are already doing organisational development. The likelihood is you are. The emphasis really here is thinking, are you thinking broadly enough or are we thinking just narrowly and tactically? So are we thinking about all the influencers? Are we making sure that we've got impact? Are we using data? And are we thinking more broadly in terms of strategic impact as opposed to just a tactical delivery of something? So we've covered Birklit Twin model, working backwards, and I've put a download of that in the show notes because it probably would help you very much to be looking at the visual as we're going through this, and definitely use it in your own OD activities. We've talked about the process of doing organisational development. We've talked about when we might be doing it. And really the main emphasis is we're probably already doing organisational development. The main thing is making sure that we're thinking broadly and more strategically as opposed to tactically when we're doing this. So I really hope you found this useful. I hope it wasn't too confusing because I realised there was lots of narrative with few visuals and I have visuals for myself to look at here. As I said, you can download those. We'll also put links to other content I've done on OD in the show notes, whether it's blogs or webinars, etc. And that's on hruprising.com. Thank you for listening. Do let me know how you found this episode. I'm really keen to hear. Thanks again. Bye. I really hope you found this week's episode useful and enjoyable. If you did, perhaps you could recommend us to a friend or colleague or give us a review on your platform of choice. It really helps new listeners to find us. Now, you can access links to any of the information mentioned in this show via the website www.hruprising.com. Further free resources are also available at www.actus.co.uk. There you can also find out more about our software and training solutions. Finally, why not join our LinkedIn group, the HR Uprising, to share ideas and collaborate with other like-minded people professionals. Thank you for listening to the HR Uprising podcast.